So we've been talking this month, as I mentioned at the beginning, about right action or wise action. And we've talked about it from a variety of angles. I was able to listen to Sue's and Lyndall's talks. I haven't yet heard Lauren's talk, and it's not online yet. So I won't be able to reference that. But some of what, Sue's laid out the groundwork, a lot of the things that are considerations when we're thinking about right action. And a lot of the advice, a lot of what you see when encountering this topic are the restraints, the precepts, the ways in which we are to avoid certain kinds of action, right? And be cautious about certain kinds of action. And then Lyndall flipped it and talked a lot about what are beneficial actions, right? Let's not just think about the things we should avoid doing, but the things we should be doing. I think those are wonderful perspectives. I'd like to bring both into the topic that I want to discuss today. And that topic is when right action meets conflict and challenge. Right? So we can both think of circumstances where we need to, when we're in states of conflict, we want to avoid making the wrong moves. But also, there are states of challenge and conflict that demand action. Right? We have to consider what is the right action. What is a beneficial and good action? So some examples of circumstances we might be thinking about. You can think about any circumstance where you need to stand up for yourself, right? Work, in a relationship, in a variety of contexts. You could think about when we're faced with injustice in society, right? What is right action? Even though it may lead to conflict, or maybe there is conflict already present. When we think about doing something that is at odds with our community or our family, right? When we think about right action in these circumstances, these are tricky circumstances. I want to give a few concrete examples. So recently, I was listening to a friend who was upset, and they were describing a conflict with someone else that they know. And they were, going into detail. They were upset, and they were talking about that conflict and what that person did and what they did in response. And as I listened, I found myself siding with the other person in that conversation. And I had this feeling like, oh, I don't know if my friend is seeing things clearly. And then, so I'm posed with the question, do I say something or do I nod in sympathy? Right? What do we do here? Another situation that I was in somewhat recently, I work at a company, and I was at a meeting with company leadership, and we were all discussing a move that would be in a direction that it increases revenue, but which didn't feel like it was good for the people we serve. And I looked around the room and everyone's nodding in agreement. So what do you do? So other situations you might think of that are concrete for a lot of us. If we've ever been in a relationship that isn't serving you, but maybe it's not all bad also, right? It's not a clear-cut situation. What do you do? Do you leave? What are the actions to take? So when I look at these situations, maybe other ones have come to your mind, maybe things that are personal to you, or maybe things that resonate. Some of the things at play in all of these situations, right? For me, there's a feeling of fear, a feeling of desire to avoid pain, right? If I disagree with the friend, And I tell them, I think they're not seeing things clearly. That could put a chill on the relationship, right? If you go against the company leadership, that's going to make it harder for you at work. You might be at odds with other people. Maybe it results in fewer opportunities. Thinking of leaving a relationship, you might worry about being alone. You might worry about causing pain to someone, right? Or causing someone you're connected to maybe hate you. So there's fear, avoidance of pain. Another thing I often come in contact with is doubt, right? What if we're wrong? Right? Or there's another kind of doubt. Is this worth the consequences? Is it worth it to act in this situation? Right? These are the things that come to mind for me. These are common to a lot of those situations where there's conflict there's conflict on the line. So I want to make it clear, I'm not saying that one should act in all of these situations I described, right? We might feel fear or doubt coming from wise places, right? So how do we know what to do? How do we know what to do? So I'll start with the first and best guides are right view and right intention, right? So when we think about this whole Noble Eightfold Path, right? One way of contextualizing all of this is right now we're talking about right action, right? And we can lump right action, right speech, and right livelihood into these sort of ethical questions, right? How do we speak? How do we act? What do we do in the world that is a livelihood? And all of these they come out of two other aspects of the Eightfold Path, right view and right intention, right? So, these are the things we cultivate to see clearly the situation and to both see what our intentions are that drive either action or inaction, and also to cultivate the intentions that we want to have, right? That we want to bring. Are we coming at this from a place of greed or aversion or ill will? And we talked for a month about ways of countering those things. So one way I want to think about, seeing clearly the situation and seeing clearly our intentions are in some of these situations, we are motivated to act and we need to kind of pause before we act, right? Like, when I hear the friend and I hear, oh, I might disagree with them. Sometimes my urge in those situations, this is just me, right? Some people default to the nodding, and that's the thing they want to do. My urge is almost to point out the thing, like, oh, I don't know if you're seeing this clearly, right? And so that's a situation where I'm motivated to act, and what I need to do is pause before acting, right? The other situation is I'm motivated not to act, right? It's easier often not to act, especially if there's a lot of fear or a lot of doubt. And then we want to ask ourselves, well, what's guiding us in this, right? Is it fear or doubt guiding us? And if it is it coming, where is it coming from? Is it coming from a wise place or an unwise place? So if we're motivated to act, right, some of the things that, some of the questions that feel like good ones here are, are we pretending, when I'm thinking about this, pointing something out to a friend, a question that often is salient to me is, am I pretending to act for a noble cause, but I'm really acting for a petty reason, right? For the friend with the conflict, why do I want to point out that I side with the other person? Or why do I want to point out that I think they may not be seeing this clearly, right? Sometimes I might realize, oh, I'm just annoyed with this friend, or I want to get a jab at them. or maybe there's something really good that I think will come out of it, right? Sometimes there are situations where I've seen people act with a lot of integrity in situations where what they say is really unpopular. I had an aunt who She lived in India, and when people would drop something on the sidewalk, they would litter. She would call them out every time. And she wasn't acting from a place of just wanting to call them out. She wanted them to feel, she did want them to feel a bit of guilt or maybe discomfort. That was part of the intention for calling them out. But she did that because she didn't want them to do this in the future. She wanted them to think about what they were doing and what it was going to do for the environment that everyone had to share. It wasn't a popular thing to do at all, right? Even other people who were there could sometimes look at her like, oh, what are you stirring this up for? Why don't you just leave this be? But it wasn't something she was willing to leave be. On the other hand, I also know people, and I know this in myself sometimes, who attack at every opportunity, right? So I have, there's an acquaintance of mine. He's a statistician, which is something I do also. And he'll get on the internet, in our LinkedIn network, and he'll attack anyone saying statistically inaccurate things. And sometimes there's a really good reason, right? Like someone is making a claim, and if people were to follow it, it could lead to something not great. It could lead to bad outcomes. But a lot of the time, and by the way, he's generally correct. When I see him, I'm like, okay, he's right when he's saying this. But sometimes I wonder if he's obscuring a good idea because it was just stated imprecisely. And so is that wise action? Where is it coming from? Right? What's the consequence? So I personally, I used to justify saying harsh things on the basis that they were true things. Okay? And I wouldn't have agreed with the idea, like if someone told me, hey, do you agree with this statement? One should absolutely say everything that is true in all circumstances. I would have been like, well, no, that doesn't sound like a statement. You should think about the circumstances. And so, it wasn't something I was doing on the surface. It wasn't something I was doing that I was really conscious of, but it's something I sort of quietly held this principle inside myself without even really recognizing it, that if something was true, it was okay to say it. And I just sort of wielded that principle when it was convenient to me. So, if I wanted to say something for some reason that may not have been very wise, I would say it, and some part of me would be like, that was okay to say. That was true. What I said was true. Yeah. Right? So these are some examples, right, where we're motivated to act, but we really ought to ask ourselves, where is this coming from? Where is it going to lead to? What's our actual intention here? What's our motivation? And yeah, cultivating mindfulness, cultivating a right view, seeing clearly, right? These are all in service of getting there, being able to do that, being able to understand these intentions. So I mentioned also the opposite situation where we're motivated sometimes not to act. We see something that's going wrong. In the company example I gave, right? I look around the room, everyone's nodding. Boy, it would be a lot easier if I just kind of nodded, or maybe I don't nod and I just decide to do nothing. Right? Is it fear or doubt guiding us? Right? Not always a bad thing, but worth knowing, right? Let's identify the thing that is guiding us in this situation, And, even in the workplace situation, is the thing that's pausing us, is it justified? Maybe in some circumstances, the harm that will come to us for acting will be very great, and the incorrect thing is not a very consequential thing, right? That's possible, right? And there are those circumstances where it's worth, once we weigh this, it is better not to say something. But on the other hand, sometimes we're avoiding a relatively small amount of personal harm that would prevent a great injustice from occurring, right? And it's good to know when that's the circumstance also. So when we cultivate right view and right intention, there's often a very specific way we feel in our bodies and our hearts where we know we're doing the right thing. And the more we cultivate this seeing clearly, this right view, this right intention, the more we recognize that, right? We can feel in ourselves when we're moving in the right direction. We can feel in ourselves when we're moving in the wrong direction, right? It's a question of whether we pay attention to that. So when we were discussing this at the beginning of the month, one of the local Dharma leaders, Nana, who you may all know, said something that really stuck with me about, and he used the word blamelessness. Blamelessness to describe that feeling, right? So when facing injustice, he was describing how he knew how to act because it was the way that would cause him to feel blameless. He would know he had done no harm, either to others or to his own convictions. And that struck me as a really good way of, I don't know if Nana's getting a chance to speak this month, so giving him credit, but saying this, with this feeling of blamelessness, you know you're moving in the right direction. When you're oriented, when you have right view, you have right intention, and you feel this blamelessness, you know you're moving in the right direction. He described that with blamelessness came an absence of doubt and fear, right? Because sometimes the fear is the fear or doubt that, you know, are we going the right way? Are we not? And when you feel blameless, you know that you're acting from the right place. But what if we aren't 100% secure in the clarity of our view, the clarity of our intention? What if the path of blamelessness isn't clear, right? It isn't always the case that we're there already when we have to confront this moral situation. So there are many other things we can turn to. There's much more advice that comes to us in these teachings. I want to mention first the importance of Sangha and wise friends. This has been mentioned already this month. With wise friends, when we're choosing carefully who we cultivate our company with, we have a supportive network, right? And then we have something to counter that feeling when we're in a room full of people where everyone's nodding and agreeing with the decision, right? We can go back to our community. We can go back to another group of people who might be shaking their heads no if we knew what they were to say, right? We could invoke them or we could actually consult with them and see what would our people, our wise friends, our community, how would they feel, right? We can rely on the wisdom of others. In this Sangha, there's so much wisdom. You know, we can rely on the wisdom of the Sangha. Conversely, unwise company can convince us of bad ideas, right? You know, you can think of so many circumstances where things like this have happened. When soldiers commit atrocities against civilians, they are often acting in the company of other soldiers, right? There are people complicit in the rise of authoritarian leaders and governments in history. You know, people complicit in the rise of Hitler in Germany, who may have been good people in a circumstance where they found themselves complicit. If you're acting in more simple circumstances, less extreme circumstances, if you're acting based on content you saw on social media, be careful, right? You're letting the ideas of people you don't know potentially influence you, right? This is an idea. This is an area where we want to know, you know, we know the influence of people around us and what they can have on us. And we don't know what we're letting in. There is a psychological term for this called groupthink. Has anyone heard this term, groupthink? Yeah, a lot of people nodding, right? This is the phenomenon where groups prioritize consensus and harmony over critical evaluation, right? This is the people nodding in the room, right? And this leads to bad decision making. So this was studied by a psychologist, Irving Janus, in 1972 originally. It was based on political decision-making groups, right, that led to bad conclusions that many of the people individually in the group would not have agreed with on their own. But in the group context, they did, and they might have enthusiastically supported it. So things that characterize groupthink are excessive optimism, ignoring negative feedback that challenges assumptions of the group, stereotyping people outside the group. Oh, those people, they're like this, right? And the illusion of unanimity, right? So these are some warning signs, right? If it feels like everyone agrees, oh, we're all on the same page. Those people who disagree with us, they're like this, right? Ignoring negative feedback. Watch out. So you can ask yourself, who am I listening to? Who's influencing me? Right? And we can cultivate that wise community. That's something that's a process we can always be involved in. Looking for friends who you think of as wise and seeing clearly, and people who will be honest with you. So that's Sangha and wise friends. There's equanimity and compassion. These are other things we can turn to, right? If you're facing a difficult dilemma, there's conflict involved. Or your action may put you into conflict with other people. Do you feel compassion for all involved? Can you evoke compassion for people on both sides of this? Are you, in some way, are we dehumanizing some of the people who have a stake in this? All right, this is a question we can ask ourselves. One way that we spoke about this when we were talking about right speech. Are we doing this affectionately through a mind of goodwill? Right? Sometimes, and that is not at odds with creating conflict or stepping into conflict or resisting, right? We can act in compassion with a mind of goodwill, even when it means stepping in front of someone or blocking their path or disrupting a plan, making someone feel not good. Right? We can have this higher mind of goodwill and compassion even when we do that. Other questions. Timeliness. Is this the right time? Is this the moment? Is this when I should be telling this friend that I don't see eye to eye with them? Context. Right? Is this the right place? Not just the right time for this action. And then when we're motivated, so those are pieces of advice when we're motivated to act. What about when we're motivated to inaction? We're feeling like not doing anything. You know, I think the phrase that comes to mind that we've all heard, if not now, when? If not me, who? Right? The other side of timeliness. And I think the last thing we can talk about is if you're still feeling cloudy, you know, it helps to cultivate core values, right? In times of relative clarity. And then when we come into these moments, we can ask the question, is this in line with my values? We can look at our values. We can write them down and stare at them in those moments. So, in summary, it's the first best guides, right? Our right view, right intention, really cultivating this clarity of seeing and clarity of intention. But when we're cloudy, there are all these things we can fall back on and become. There are lots of questions we can ask ourselves and try to pose a few, and you may come up with others. And so we're about to split into groups now. And I think some topics for discussion. We can, one thing that is absolutely fair game and a prompt for the discussions are times when we have felt that either that acting, would put us into conflict and challenge, and what do we do? Or we were motivated to act. We were about to jump to an action and we were pausing and we realize, oh, well, where is this going to lead? What will emerge from this? Is it something that is wise? Is it the right time? Is it the right context? You might also think I've been talking about things I haven't said, about circumstances I haven't mentioned, about questions that you find helpful to ask yourself in these circumstances. So these are just prompts for discussion. If something has come to you that you want to discuss, lead with that. So I hope you stay with us for these discussions. I'll give everyone a moment. I'll take a pause. For anyone who does need to leave or wants to leave. And then I'll split us into groups of three or four. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for sitting with me. Welcome back, everyone. So we have time now for questions and comments, and one way to do it is to raise your hand. And I see Julie already has her hand raised. So raising hands can be done at the bottom of your Zoom screen usually. But please, Julie, feel free to unmute yourself and
Thanks, Arv.
yeah.
I really appreciated your talk today, and I was just laughing. I jumped on to raise my hand because I was watching the 3-2-1 countdown, and Nikhil was saying something really awesome, and I shouted, "Please bring that up." I don't know if he heard me or not. And hopefully he will. The only thing that I wanted to bring up that came from my practice this month, which has been really kind of interesting for me, is I've been thinking a lot about how action also includes the ways that we choose to interact with our thoughts. And it's been a pretty rich thing for me to contemplate.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's a very I'm really glad you brought that into the room. Yeah, that's a really great point. So we make these choices, and when we're mindful of what we're doing, we realize the ways in which we interact with our own thoughts, right? Those are actions, those are choices that we make, and these same principles can be applied. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Leslie.
Good morning. This is my first visit to the Sunday Sangha, so
Oh, welcome.
thank you very
Glad to
much.
have you.
Yeah, thanks. Something I shared with my group, and I would love to hear your thoughts on, is these marvelous and very helpful suggestions for moving forward and in situations like this. But I often find that the conflict can escalate at a much faster speed than the thoughts. And I had a recent situation, big fight with my sister, and boy, when it's family that you have a long, long history with, boom, 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 just punch each other's buttons and escalate like almost instantaneously. Yeah, so I guess I'm just thinking about these instructions and these
Right.
suggestions in that context of what can I do to slow it down? Because often it goes real fast, and then I've
Oh,
got to,
yeah.
then I'm digging myself out rather than, responding appropriately.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I think we've all been there. That's a great situation to bring up. And I'm sure practically everyone here can relate to that in some way, right? So there are circumstances where you may have even, and you may have even gotten internally aligned and known what you were going to say and spoken from what you wanted to, what you believe to be the right choice. And then something gets said back, and then we respond, and then they respond, and then we respond. Yeah. So there are a couple of things I want to talk about here. One is, I have done this sometimes where I will get aligned, I'll make a decision, and then in the moment when I'm actually taking the action or saying the speech, I'm not quite where I was when I made the decision. So the very first thing that comes out of my mouth, or the very first thing I do, is the right thing based on what I thought when I was in the state where I felt clear. But the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, they're coming from a different place. They're coming from where I am in this moment, right? Or maybe where I am in the moment right after I hear the thing that triggers me that the person says, right? So some things, if we have the luxury of preparing in advance for the moment when we take the action, right, we can prepare for that moment. We can become mindful. I'm not saying this is something you needed to do and didn't do. Sometimes we don't have these opportunities, and sometimes we've done all this work. But one thing we can do is, we can prepare. Sometimes I sit just for a few minutes. If I'm, if I need to get on a call and it's in the call that I need to say something, or I'm going to take an action or do something and I have time to prepare. So then I can get really grounded and aligned. And I think the key word here is aligned, aligned with that intention, aligned with that view, right? Before I take the action. And sometimes it's stable enough, right? I do this when my parents come and visit. When my parents come and visit, and I'm going to the airport to pick them up, I do this work in the car. I'm like, okay, what do I want? What's my alignment here? How do I want to show up to this? What's my intention, right? And sometimes that gets me through like the first couple of triggers. But also, we're going to end up in the situations where what you're saying happens, right? And then this brings up a whole rich other area, which we did not go into today, of what happens after an action. What do we do afterward? What do we do when things didn't go the way we wanted to, right? And I would say that we return to the same alignment. We return to these same intentions. We return to our values. And we might have to choose another action. We might have to choose something to say to the person. We might have to choose an action to take. And it's in response to what's already happened that didn't go the way we hoped it would go. Yeah, those are two things. I wonder if there are other people. There might be other things. Go ahead, Leslie.
Actually, thank you for what you said. And something that just came to me was in that moment, what I think could have been, because I kind of got jumped. This was a phone call that came out of the blue, and it went from there. So I think going into my body would have been helpful in that moment. Just, okay, something's going on here. This is everything's whipped up right now.
Yeah.
Where do I feel my butt on the seat? Where do I feel my feet?
Yeah.
Where do I feel my hands? What's my breath doing?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
I think that might be a quick aid in those moments of instantaneousness.
Yeah, that, what great advice. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. You led me to it.
Yeah, no, my boss does something like this. She taps her fingers together.
Oh, I like it.
And it's just very subtle. And she's just reminding herself of her body.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Leslie. Yeah, Judith.
Thanks, Arv, for very thought-provoking talk. That's great. I was just thinking that at this stage of my life, most of my conflicts with other people are people I don't know, like the government and bureaucracies and people that I can't really do much about.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just causes this kind of underlying frustration because I can't really deal with it. And it seems like in my personal life, most of my conflicts are with myself.
Hmm.
Should I do this? Should I do that?
Uh-huh.
And yeah. And that kind of, you know, circling the drain type of confusion back and forth. And, yeah. And of course, that's something I can do something about. You know, I can try to come back to the basics, try to see, as Leslie was saying, how does this feel in the body?
Right.
There are steps that can be taken there to ultimately come to decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But this feeling of conflict with the outside situation is much harder to deal with. And I'm probably not alone in that. But
No, I bet you're not. Yeah, so I think this is just, you know, these are just some off-the-cuff thoughts on this. But I like to categorize that, you know, those feelings into what we can do and what we cannot do. Right. And I think there's fertile ground in the what we can do territory. Right. There are things that we can do. And then we think about why we do them and what the consequences are. You know, I know people who act and they act less because they think that the thing they're doing will cause some, sorry, someone's at the door. They think less that they're acting because it's going to achieve something. There's going to be some goal-oriented consequence to their action. They do this and this thing changes. You may feel particularly powerless, but they do it because they know that they will feel better about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They write the letters, or they go to the protest, or they write to the congressman. You know, they do the action because they know how it will make them feel. And there's a really subtle distinction there, right? Because part of the situation is how we feel in our bodies, and part of the situation is the reality of what's happening that we want to address and change.
Right.
And so in the realm of what we can do, There are remedies that act on both of these things. There are things that may actually lead to change, and we can think upon those things. And there are things that make us feel like, well, I did what I could, or whatever it is that causes us to feel in our bodies like we're less in a struggle with the situation. Then, of course, there is what we cannot do anything about. And to the extent that there are things we cannot do anything about, you know, this is where so much of the rest of our practice comes in, right? We can't do anything about the fact that we will die. We cannot do anything about the fact that we will age and get sick, and that those we love will age and get sick, right? There's, you know, the same kinds of ideas and principles we work with there, right? We can work with what the other thing, this is yet another thing we cannot do anything about sometimes. To that extent, where nothing is possible.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Really rich again. Mm-hmm. So it's 11:27. Nikhil, you were called out at the beginning. I want to hear, so that maybe that'll be the last sharing. And then I'll go into announcements and then after that. Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, our group discussion kind of prompted me to think about something that I've been working with recently, which is, sometimes when we have this conditioning where there's this habit we've built and there's, you know, something that we're doing that we think is causing us suffering. And then there's this idea that we have of what we think we should be doing and how sometimes that can even just like end up causing more suffering, where if we think, oh, like, I think the example for me where I've been working with this recently was actually just like browsing YouTube and just like scrolling through it forever endlessly during my evenings. And I had started to notice, hey, like, I don't think I actually enjoy this. But when I was in that moment, I really just wanted to do that. And I felt that if I just browsed enough and scrolled enough, I could just like find the right video and that would like satisfy this craving. And the way I started, I think the way I would have typically worked with this would have been that I would have been like, okay, I need to like really buckle down and have this like this really push towards this intention of I'm not going to do this. I'm going to change this behavior. And I had heard Tuari, someone had asked a question during a Sims, during I think like one of the Monday sits. And basically the essence of the question was, should I do take action A or should I take action B? And in my head, I thought, oh, you're supposed to take action B because that's the one where you would be with the thing that you're uncomfortable with. And the Tuari's actual response was that there's no right answer. Either choice is perfectly acceptable as long as it's made with mindfulness and made with awareness of what you experience from either outcome and either choice. Uh-huh. And that was really this moment of clarity for me because, you know, when I was working with this with using YouTube, I didn't really try to force myself to do something different. I just tried to notice, oh, hey, like I'm noticing these physical sensations of my body of like, I don't think I like this. What is this experience? But I didn't really try to force myself to do something different. And so I just basically sat through myself, like going for hours on the TV, scrolling through YouTube, not enjoying it, but feeling like I was supposed to enjoy it. And feeling like it'll get to the point that like, I'll find the right video and then like this craving will be satisfied. And I did that for probably months. And over time, I started to realize the thing I'm looking for isn't there. And that craving just kind of naturally subsided. And when that craving started to subside, it became easy to figure out, okay, this is actually what I want to do. I think I just want to not do this in my evenings. And it was kind of this natural kind of like shift in behavior where I think oftentimes I think the way you had phrased it was that like, you feel like you're acting from noble intention, but is it like noble intention or is it just like from selfing? And sometimes trying to change my behavior sometimes feels like it can come from the selfing. It feels like it's this noble behavior, but it's really just like this idea of what I should do. And when you address when you try to just like address the craving and be with that understanding and see like what's the reality of that, the kind of the path forward that you want to take kind of just like kind of emerges on its own. So yeah, that was kind of what it kind of like come up.
Yeah. That's really subtle. So your point is that if you had done the thing you're supposed to do, which is to sort of pull out of that, right, and not continue, you might have actually had a less lasting and wise conclusion to the whole activity than if you'd let yourself see it and recognize the truth of the fact that you were never going to be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, basically that I think if I try to just like force myself to have like the steeliness of intention towards the action as opposed to the awareness, the craving would never have been addressed. And so that would have always been present. So even if I'd been able to do it for a little while, that craving would always still be there because I didn't really understand it and didn't understand the truth of it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a really deep point. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. That's a great subtle point. Thank you. Okay. I want to acknowledge it's 11:31, at least in Pacific time. So for anyone who needs to leave right now, of course, that is welcome because this is the moment we're supposed to end. So lastly, an offering of metta before we part ways. May we awaken to the truth of our experiences. May we free ourselves from unnecessary suffering. May all beings awaken to the truth. May all beings be free of suffering. Thank you, everyone.